This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the GNSO EPDP team, Small Team A meeting, taking place on the 10th of January 2019 at 1400 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone, could you please let yourselves be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names, we do have listed apologies from Farzaneh Badi of the NCSB and Kavuz Aresta of GAC. They have formally assigned Tatiana Tropina, NCSG, and Raul Gosain, GAC, as their alternate for this call and for remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment must be formalized by way of a Google assignment form. The link is available in the agenda pod and in the meeting invite email. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak now. If you need assistance updating your statements of interest, please email the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found on the EPDP Wiki space. There is a view-only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your names before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you, and over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. You may begin.
Great. Thanks, Andrea, and thanks, everyone, for the on-time start. After the last meeting, we went through a few iterations for how to present the results, it would make your full team's analysis the easiest. And this is a format I think we've settled on for sending out to you, and I've selected an easy example for your review, but each recommendation or each purpose is on one page. And in this one, recommendation 18, we have the initial report language. And then, as you remember, in our meeting on Tuesday, we settled on taking out that last clause, as this will affect the ability to have publicly available decisions. And leave the proposed updated language, like you see here, and with some, fairly simple rationale that we might be able to flesh out a little bit more for you. But I think the objective of this format is to give your groups an easy way to review the results of our discussion on this recommendation. And, I almost think when you get this, there'll be a checkbox or something like this, so we can check the yeses. So at the end, we'll have a pile of these recommendations where the small group settled on proposed updated language or agreed that the initial language was correct. And those of which your group agrees with you, they can all throw on the same pile. So at the end of the day, we'll have a stack of recommendations that, after review of public comment, either have stayed the same or have been amended in response to that public comment. So we'll distribute these as shortly after the meetings today that we can, so that hopefully your group can review those recommendations for which we have agreement in the small team, apparent agreement, and let the whole group signify that. So it's just meant to provide a tool that makes it easy for you to review that and approve language where the small group came to agreement. And then from my bully pulpit, I want to urge on all of us, for the members of this team to give deference to the finding of small group B on the other side, and I would ask that they would give our findings some level of deference or, some presumption of correctness before changing them. But at the end of the day, we're providing this sort of format to kind of make it easy. So there'll be one page for each recommendation or one page for each purpose. Are there any questions about that? Okay, keep screwing up. Okay, cool. I think in the agenda, we also have purpose 6, is that right? Okay. So let's, let's take them in numerical order as we go through the initial report. So we'll take, purpose 4, purpose 6, and then recommendation 12 and recommendation 14. And, you know, from the School of Sneaky Management, I think that's going from, admittedly, that's going from, easiest to hardest, but, or maybe easiest to, you know, those requiring the most discussion. I'm not so sure there's, disagreement. I think the conversation is just more complex. And, so I want to just set that up. Expectation, hoping to get through the first couple pretty rapidly. So I've got on my laptop, I've got in Adobe Acrobat, I have these documents up, which are the purpose 4, purpose 6, recommendation 12, and recommendation 14. And then on my browser, I also have open the PCRTs for those same ones so that I can review those also. So before I give us a few minutes to read through this summary of purpose 4, and it might not take 5 minutes in this case, and then go on to the substantive discussion. I just want to pause to see if there's any comments or perturbations to how we've been running this. Hey. Georgios. All right, so with that, let's we've already had a couple minutes, but I don't know if we need to make that document a little smaller so it's easier to read it, if you blow up the page, or how it's best for it to be read, but it's kind of oversized on my screen, so I don't know if we want to make it look something like that. And then if you guys would take a couple minutes if you need to read through this summary of the different concerns and rationales that were raised, and also look maybe at your PCRT if you need to. So I think if you guys are set on this one, when I read through this earlier, I remember three suggested changes. One was by many, especially among the contracted parties, to remove or other availability, as that adds a vagueness that's probably not appropriate. Another recommended change was somebody's doing some loud typing. So somebody else recommended that we add the words past and present registered name holders. And this is my conjecture, you know, I think that would apply only during the data retention period. But for whatever reason, data is retained past the life of the registered name, it'd want to be safeguarded. So we'd have to think whether that's required there or not. And then finally, there's a recommendation to delete this in its entirety, as if you think about the breadth of number one, you know, it's sort of subsumed into purpose number one. You know, I just want to stick my two cents in it. I think that's a valid point. But I think also we're finding that as we tend to do more data analysis, we might tend to, subdivide purposes even more. So I think, you know, this is carved out as a separate purpose, in one case at least, because the data process might be different. So it's necessary to have that there. So I saw those as the three changes, but, I think, based on the comment, those would be our choices to add past or present and delete the vagueness introduced by other unavailability. Alan Woods, please go ahead.
How are you? Alan Woods for the record. Okay, so I'll just set out the stall on these three anyway, straight away. From my point of view, and indeed, I think it was reflected in the reasoning of the Registry Stakeholder Group's comments as well, I agree that we should definitely remove the and future recommendations or the future policies that may be created, because again, it is absolutely not specific enough, and we were already warned against making such future thinking language within the European Data Protection Board's responses to us. So we need to be very careful and specific. So I'm absolutely okay with removal of the older one, of the future thing. I'm on the wrong one, aren't I? Sorry, that's crazy. Am I looking at the right one? Apologies.
No, but you can just change your whole comment to other availability. There you go.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm looking at my wrong note. But okay, so with the past, present, and registered, let's go to that one first. And the past, present, and registered name holders in the policy store. We can't add that in number one because, I think you put your nail on the head. Number one, there are, the retention periods need to be put in place. But also, one of the things we haven't actually discussed at all is the legacy, issue on this at all. And this goes straight knee deep into the concept of legacy. And I don't think it is as easy as just changing the purpose and saying, hey, you're all covered by this now. This is something that it's unnecessary, completely to put in there. And of course, what I just said about future as well, it doesn't make sense in this one. With regard to John Poole's comment, now John Poole's comment, I see where he's coming from and I agree, but in the interest of transparency, again, from our point of view as people who work in this from a day-to-day basis, we understand the nuance that could be included in purpose one. However, I don't think there's any harm in having a separate purpose in which we call out specifically something which is very, very, you know, it is a large disclosure to a third party who is technically outside of the DNS scope, and that is to the data ESCO provider. So we need to be absolutely clear on that one, that it is not necessarily going to be included in one, but we can call it out and say this is something that we are letting you know as data subjects, as we're registrants, that we will be disclosing in this instance for this purpose alone. And I think it merits a good point, but I think we are okay in a way duplicating on that one. So the other or unavailability also is the point in that one is, again, we're hedging our bets there. We need to be specific, and other unavailability is not clear enough for that purpose. So the only thing I would agree with is the removing of the or other unavailability. I'm sorry about the confusion at the beginning.
Thanks very much, Alan. Georgios, please go ahead.
Yes, hello everybody. I would like to agree with Alan concerning the last point. So I believe that for reasons of transparency, we should keep the text as is and not reword it or remove the purpose. Also, I believe that the second concern, I think, is more or less covered by the retention period. But I wanted to ask regarding the first concern, when we drafted this, does anybody remember whether there was specific, more specific worries about things that we might not cover by the business or technical failure? And that's why we try to keep the drafting language with other unavailability open in case something else might occur. If not, I think I would agree to remove agree with the first concern and remove the other unavailability as it is in the purpose for. Thanks.
Thanks, Georgios. There does seem to be some consistency in the comments across purposes about removing ambiguous terms, such as Alan Woods pointed out in the future in another one and. In this one, so I would challenge us to think of what other unavailability that might occur, and maybe go to the rigor of identifying those if they exist, rather than having the catch-all. So I agree with that. Alan Greenberg, hi.
Thank you. Again, going in reverse order, I agree with Alan Woods on number one. On the third one, it technically may be included in one, but I think it's important enough that it needs to be identified. Under past and present, although I think it's a great idea, it completely changes the escrow policy as we have it, and that's not within our mandate. But I will point out, because of the retention period, the escrow providers do have some older versions. If for some reason the most recent one is not the correct one, it won't go back longer than the retention period, but, you know, there is some information there. On the first one, I have a concern with it, because if you look, for instance, at a registrar that has not technically had a business failure, you know, they still maybe paying their taxes and they're still a registered company, their computers are running, but they just don't do anything. You know, they don't answer their phones, they don't respond to queries. That's not a technical failure. That's not a business failure. And yet, they're functionally not providing the service. So I think we really need to cover that one way or another, and whether it's with specific language saying not providing all of the services as, you know, recognized in the RAA or something like that. But I think we have to cover it, because there's plenty of ways a registrar can stop functioning, but not satisfy the technical failure or business failure. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I think I could term any of what you said as failing for either business or technical reasons, or I could say that, you know, it's some operational failure.
Yeah. Kurt, yeah, you're right, but those aren't the words we use. We use business or technical failure, and those are much more narrow things than just not doing your job.
Nah, maybe, but I your points were well taken. I was just commenting on it. Margie, go ahead.
Yes, this is Margie. I was going to say the same things that Alan said, Alan Greenberg. I see that the word unavailability is too broad, so I agree with that. But I think we need to maybe use a more narrow term, something along the lines of what Alan Greenberg just said, that, you know, substantial inability to, you know, perform the contract, you know, the registration services under the contract. I think that's what we're trying to get at. Because if you think about it, some registrars or registries might be part of a larger business and their other business units and things might be working fine, but the registration side of the business isn't. And so that's why I think the word technical or business failure may not really capture that. Another area that might not be captured is if they just simply are terminated by ICANN too. So I think if we refer back to the contract to the specific registry, a substantial, you know, inability to provide the registration services under the applicable contract, something like that, we would cover that concept.
Thanks, Margie.
And then with the past and present, I agree with what Alan Greenberg said about the fact that it should already be covered because of the data retention period. So I wouldn't change anything with respect to the comment that George Kirkos made. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Margie. Hi, Emily. Could you, intervention, could you reply to Alan and Margie's suggestions?
Yes, absolutely. Happy to. Hello, everybody. I think Margie's made a good suggestion there about, you know, trying to get a bit more specific on what we mean by other unavailability. And it's clearly not something trivial, like, you know, being a bit rubbish at answering the phone in the moment. It's something a bit more I like the idea of the substantial failure. I noticed that Yulf is saying we need to define it. I think that concepts such as reasonable and substantial are quite well understood in sort of contractual language, because it's really a non-trivial type of failure and carries with it the sense that this is something more lasting and more serious than just being a bit rubbish at doing your business. So on board with that one. Clearly, as the RRSG proposed removing other unavailability, and we are now kind of trying to remove some of that ambiguity, I would support that effort. And on the past and present, even if you step beyond the scenario where you're covered by data retention, my worry with adding past and present is, again, it's quite unclear what we mean and could potentially be a whole other service, historic lookups, I think that I would agree with others who are uncomfortable with that suggestion. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Emily. So what I heard from us are the two words I heard from us were, and see in the chat, are operational and operational failure, and then another choice of words is Emily's I don't know how you put it, Emily, substantial failure, or what would that word be?
I can't remember what I said. I think it was something. It was about a non-trivial, or it was about something that was longer lasting, but it wasn't particularly well phrased, I think. Maybe others who are listening rather than me speaking might remember. Sorry, Kurt.
Yeah, I know. Margie's suggestion about inability to perform is sort of a contractual term of art, but I wonder if adding operational sorts of covers it off, because that, to me, that covers the things that Alan brought up in the early comment that others sort of ratified. Alan Greenberg?
Yeah, just to reinforce the fact that, as Margie said, termination by ICANN is a reason we may need escrow, and that's not covered by the current one, so we need to include that as well.
I think
as Alan Woods said, I didn't equate it to failure. I'm saying it is a separate reason that we may need escrow. Deaccreditation, correct, Milton?
So do we want to add two words, operational and deaccreditation? Diane?
I think that might be specific. I think we want to go with something a little broader, like if the services are terminated or no longer operationally provided as stated in the contract.
Okay, so I think that's right. So the list is becoming, you know, business, technical, operational failure, and I've already forgotten exactly what Diane said, but our services are no longer provided as required by contract. And I think even termination is different from that. You know, you get terminated for not paying your ICANN fee or for something like that. Although I would regard that as a business failure myself and be able to draw back. So let's try to coalesce around something. So I think adding the word operational is good. So we could leave it in that somewhat long way, right? Business, technical, operational, failure. I don't know. We'd have to wordsmith a little bit business, technical, or operation failure, or failure to perform services in accordance with the contract, or termination by ICANN, or deaccreditation by ICANN. Would those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the list became, or if services are terminated or no longer operational as provided in the contract. So I don't know if Caitlin can type that all up and see if we're I think inability to perform, Milton, is kind of a tough one because, you know, in contracts, there's the, everybody knows this, there's this prospective inability to perform that where parties are still performing according to their duties, but someone identifies, that shortly they won't be able to, and therefore the contract is terminated. So I think inability to perform is like a prerequisite to the contract termination or deaccreditation. Emily, can you go ahead?
Yeah, just on that, because I think that there seems to be some potential agreement in the chat around something similar to this. I think that the concept that's missing from inability to perform the registrar obligations under the contract is the concept of substantial or sustained or long lasting or something like that. So it's not a one-off incident, you know, that mm-hmm. could a sort of force majeure type of thing, or even just, you know, Christmas or something like that. It's got to be a sustained type of failure that I think we're all trying to pin down a bit. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm just scrolling up with the chat. So what Milton has is inability to perform the registrar obligations under the contract. Alan Greenberg, go ahead. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm not sure inability to perform without a notice of termination from ICANN is sufficient. I'd look at look to ICANN Legal for the right wording. The expression ICANN does use in its letters is notice of termination of the RIA. I'm not sure the failure to perform prior to the formal termination is sufficient, but I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, so I'm thinking more about Milton's suggestion and Emily's reply, and the inability to perform isn't their kind stated in the contract, but might be, there might be a temporary outage where the data is released to someone else to temporarily perform while the registrar repairs whatever needs to be repaired. We've kind of made this a bit complicated. I'm Alan Woods.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think we have made it a bit complicated, but I mean, as I just said there in the chat there, obviously if we're stating a purpose for ESCO, we can't go beyond what is required within the actual contracts for both the registry and the registrar. So I know from our point of view, from a registry point of view, it is specifically stated in our contracts where the release of the deposits would occur in specification 2, I think it's paragraph 6. But there's a huge list of them. There's 8 different things there. I don't think we need to be that specific within the text of the actual purpose itself. I think we're probably going a little bit too much, and that we're overthinking ever so slightly. We don't need to cover everything here because it's already covered in contract. So let's see. And I think the RRA is 3.6 in the RRA. Well, not the RA, the RAA. So again, we need to be mindful that we're not trying to reinvent a wheel here. We're just saying that for the purposes of escrow, data may be used for the purposes of escrow as defined, basically. So we have to get here.
So should we point to the RAA? Do we say business or operational failure for business? Or technical failure as described in that section of the RAA?
We're not setting a legal thing, we're not setting up the legal essence in which we can do it and the purpose. We're just saying here that personal data may be processed and will be disclosed for the purposes of escrow. We don't need to say what the purposes of escrow are in the purpose because that is defined in our contract. So again, I think we're probably going a bit too far. We're probably already too far in there by even saying in the event of a business or technical failure. We're just saying for the purposes of escrow. The reason why we put in the in the event of business and technical failure, I presume, and the way I would look at it, was in order to fully inform, again, the casual observer to say, this is why escrow is there. If we fail, if there's a business or a technical failure, we don't need to get into the details there because so to actually give an option, I would say provide mechanisms safeguarding registered name holders, registration data in the event of a business or technical failure as defined in the contract, maybe, or something like that. I'm not on the fly, is not great, but that's what I would suggest.
So I think that's a good approach. I'm concerned about making a laundry list that's actually different from what's in the RAA and making it sound like a complete list. And I also think that we're just trying to capture here that we're sending off data to escrow for a good reason that's defensible to the Data Protection Board and also can allow us to evaluate our data processing needs. Alan, can you bring us home?
Yes, the wording in the RAA is the data shall be released from escrow upon expiration without renewal or termination of this agreement. I think that covers it all. We could either repeat those words or refer to them.
Alan Woods, you're looking at the RAA. Is that a good response? A good finishing touch?
So I'm now actually looking at the RIA that Emily, I got that from Emily. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, as long as it's limited to that, I'm looking at the RIA, which is slightly more involved, not going to lie, where that happened. But yeah, I mean, again, I'm not against Alan's wording there at all. I nothing in that seemed to scream bad at me. So, well, obviously, it's in the, you know, the agreement.
Emily or other contracted parties, does that make sense to you?
Hi. I think that sort of referring back to the contractual language does make sense and avoids confusion, and I think it's good to be consistent where we can for people who haven't had the pleasure of going through this process in detail. And just so I think that I would be happy to go with the language in 3.6.2 of the RAA, which is that the data should be released from escrow upon expiration without renewal or termination of this agreement. You know, in a way, the business or technical failure that the purpose has at the moment could take out or other unavailability, and you could say as foreseen in the RAA, or put in the reference if you wanted to be more specific. Thank you.
Thanks, Emily. Yeah, I think if we just replace that wording with that, that might be good. Margie?
I think we probably need to take a different approach because we're assuming that people understand what those words mean. And if you think about what we're doing with these purposes, we have to go back to the registrant at, you know, during the registration process and inform them as to what, you know, the data could be used for. And so using these really technical things like, you know, sections of an agreement, that sort of thing, I think would be confusing to the registered name holder. So I think it's better to probably do some sort of, reference to the actual words as opposed to, like, sections or references to agreements that a registrant would just simply not understand. So I think that's what I think would make more sense.
Okay. Thanks, Margie. I think that's what Caitlin's reflecting up in the wording, Alan Woods.
Yeah, thank you. So being able to see what Caitlin's put up on the screen, good. I was just going to point out that we need to retain the business or technical failure, because we must remember that escrow can still be, deposits can be called upon and used even where there hasn't been a termination of the agreement. If it could be a temporary failure, that could be rectifiable at some point in the future, but doesn't necessarily lead to the termination. So we need to be clear that we're not closing the door there as well. So I think what is written up there at the moment seems to be that's well with me, Phil.
Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, if we're going to end up referring to contracts, I'll point out the RAA, the registry agreement, is a little bit more complex because it includes words saying the old, you know, if we're transitioning from one registry to another, it doesn't necessarily mean there's a failure, but it may be a decision to transition. The old registry is asked to give the data. In the event they don't, escrow is used. So the wording is if we're relying on the contract, is somewhat more convoluted in the RAA. And if we're going to use those, then we have to make sure we're not missing some crucial point. The RAA has very simple expression. Thank you.
So that's a good point, and so do we want to add that into this, or is this adequate? Because in the transfer of data to another registrar, you know, if the registrar does not do that, in a sense, it's a business or technical failure.
No,
so,
it could be
willful. That's a, well, I would call that a business or technical failure, but I understand what you're saying.
Can I propose something? It's Alan.
Sure. Yeah.
I would suggest we keep the existing words, including unavailability, but add to that as specified in the RAA and the RA.
So there was Margie's comment that would
We're keeping the general language for the registrant, but we're adding a technical term to delimit it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say at the second part of my sentence. So
sorry.
I think that's okay. I think it's okay to say in these things that, you know, that in the case that contracts are broken or violated or terminated. Are you okay with that, Margie?
Yes, sorry. I couldn't get off mute. Yes, that works.
Okay, let's read the second version for a second. It kind of gets back to what Emily, please go ahead.
The other availability that we all disliked is now back in. I'm not quite sure why that was a good idea.
Because it's now.
We have it as defined. Yeah. But the as defined could possibly be referring to any other part of that sentence, like a business or technical failure. I guess it's okay. Sorry. Let's
yep.
move on.
Yeah.
This was our easy one. Yeah.
So what if we take out the word other? Yeah, so I think that's better. That's an improvement. So, all right. So here's language. So I think we've run over on this one about 5 minutes, and it was supposed to be an easier one. And I sympathize with the wordsmithing comments in the chat. So, I'll pause for a minute and suggest we go with this, and then we're gonna take this as our recommendation to the plenary and see what happens. Okay, great. So we're going to move on to purpose 6. I think. And you know, I'm really sorry. At the start of the meeting, I didn't. There's some new people here, and we kind of dove right in. But I think the new people are kind of getting the gist. And if they participated in Group B last time, they certainly know that our MO here is to take 5 minutes to read the summaries of the comments and rationale, not the edits, but the edits, proposed edits can be found in the PCRT. This one's a little more complex, but, you know, maybe its complexity will lead to a easier solution. So if we could make that a little bit smaller so when people blow it up, they can see it, and take 5 minutes to read through this purpose 6, and then if you have your PCRT open too, there's quite lengthy comments that there with about, you know, eight different suggested changes. So I'll pause for a few minutes and let you guys read through that. Okay. There were a number of comments to this one. I'll just try to summarize them the best I can. There were a few recommendations for change to the introduction, coordinate, optimize, and facilitate. I remember we did our wordsmithing exercise on these in our face-to-face meetings and went through many iterations of that. One suggestion is to just make it operationalize, which would simplify things. I think somebody else, and I apologize to whoever made this comment, added an additional word there too, but I recall simplifying, operationalized. Then there is, my eyesight's failing me a little bit here, but there's the idea that we take out, as Alan Wood says, future development, future domain dispute mechanisms. Oh, was to add the word establish, so coordinate, operationalize, establish, and facilitate policies. So one comment added a word, other comments simplified it to operationalize. I'm kind of fond of simple things. there were a whole set of comments about as opposed to the use of such domain names rather than the registration of domain names. I think we're clear on that, but I think it might have confused some other people. And others wanted to interject language that while this had to do with the registration of domain names, the dispute resolution processes had to do with the content, or the use of such domain names, and to make that clear. So that was a distinction that was made. A third change that was made was about the enumeration of the dispute resolution processes. So some people suggested PDDRP and RRDRP be taken out because it's not a dispute between the registered name holder and the contracted party. Others suggested that they all be taken out in deference to there's other dispute resolution processes such as courts. So there might be arbitration. So there might be other reasons in domain disputes besides these four, transferring processing or transferring data, disclosure of data. And then I think I already mentioned taking out the future develop domain. So there are kind of three choices there, taking out the two registry disputes, PD and RRDRPs, taking out future development processes, or taking them all out. And then there was some simplified language provided in comments 11, which I think we already covered, and 14 was a, if you look at comment number 14, that was a simpler way of stating the dispute. So I think, and then there was finally, John Poole recommended that we delete the whole purpose because it was covered under purpose one, but I think we've already covered that. So I'm going to stop talking and ask the queue open and discuss it, any or all of those. So there's quite a bit there, but let's see if we can break it into chunks. So I think one is the preamble of three words, two is the listing of the dispute resolution mechanisms, and three would be the handling of, the parenthetical as opposed to the use of such domain names, whereas some people have pointed out that that's a correct statement, but UDRP ERS do their balancing based on the content. So I think those are the three main issues there. So I haven't read the chat, so. I think there was basic agreement for taking out future developed domain name registrations. Do we need to take into account other existing dispute mechanisms like litigation? Alan Greenberg, thank you.
Clearly, litigation may need to reveal information. I'm presuming court orders fall under some other mechanism within the GDPR that are not, because they're not our mechanisms. They're the court's mechanisms. Arbitration or something like that, I'm not quite sure if it falls under. And Trang noted that the transfer dispute resolution policy is a key one that might require such information, and we didn't include that one. It's not an intellectual property protection mechanism, but it's certainly an ICANN policy related to domain name registrations.
Right. Thanks, Alan. I think that's a really good distinction about court orders, so maybe we can leave that behind. And I think the transfer policy might be covered in other areas of this where we're focusing on disputes here.
I don't think so. We talked about transfer has to be looked at, but as a purpose for revealing information, it is a policy related to domain name registration. So,
okay. Margie, go ahead, please.
I'm looking at option one. I'm asking why we are taking out CDRP, the list, because the as opposed to the use of such domain names is not appropriate without referencing those policies. Those policies actually do take into account the use of such domain names. That parenthetical is not actually tracking what's in the bylaws. I would suggest that we delete that or reference how the bylaws reference that language. To be consistent, and we include back the list. I don't know why we would delete the list.
Okay, thanks. So let's start over. So let's, Kaylin, if we could, look at the original language. I want to try to get through this. So let's break it into chunks a little bit. Since Margie and Alan brought up the list, I'm kind of thinking that PDDRP and RRDRP are different. I remember ICANN, I don't know if it was Dan or Trang, or it was an answer to an ICANN question, was that they thought these didn't belong here. But, I agreed with that at the time, but I kind of see that as requiring a dispute resolution mechanism, which is what this is about. Would require a transfer of data to a dispute resolution provider. So I think I'd be for keeping the list and taking out future developed domain registration dispute mechanisms.
If I could respond to that, why would we delete out future dispute resolution procedures if they are adopted in accordance with the ICANN bylaws and the GNSO procedures? Why would that be excluded? So, I mean, obviously you have those two limitations, but there's no reason to assume that we will never have another dispute resolution procedure in the future that includes somehow addressing a who is issue.
Right. Go ahead, Alan. I think Alan has a response, so.
Yeah, I do. The reason we cannot put in the future type language such as that is because when a person registers a domain, they're provided with a very specific privacy policy. And that privacy policy is not, you can't just say to the data subject, we're going to use your data for this purposes. Oh, and if you come up with something in the future which we might want to use your data for, we'll use it for that too. That just will not wash. And that's exactly why we cannot have future looking in that. It specifically is hedging your bet. The way we properly do future policies is that embedded into the actual policy development. And this is actually a recommendation that I raised way back in one of the plenaries, is to say that all future policy development processes must, where there is an envisaged processing of personal data must go through a data protection impact assessment and must be, you know, adequately complete in that. We cannot, it has to go through the process at the time, not now. We cannot do it now. So that would be my response to that.
I personally don't think this would taking out those words would preclude future policies. So anyway, Margie, I think, has a reply.
I think that Alan raises a good point, but what would happen, what could happen, I guess, obviously we don't know what will happen in the future, is that it may apply to new registrations where you can provide them that, you know, specific purpose, right? So it's not inconceivable that there'd be a policy in the future, and then all new registration agreements after that would have the specificity that is needed to give the registrant the knowledge, you know, and information that the data would be used for that. Because I understand Alan's concern.
So I think the risk to, of Alan's concern is it might take it out of GDPR compliance land. And I think future policies might take existing, you know, affect existing registrations too. I don't know. Alan, go ahead if you have, you can provide a better feedback than I.
Which Alan?
Alan Greenberg.
Sorry. I like the language of future development, future policies, because it means we don't need to worry about, you know, slippage. All contracts with all registrant agreements say that you are subject to future policies and we may change this agreement as necessary going forward. So we already have the vagueness in the registrant agreement anyway. But it's not a die-in-the-dish issue, as Alan Woods pointed out. Any future policy development should take this into account, and we should put it on our checklist to make sure it does. And, it's not a die-in-the-ditch issue in my mind. We can take it out, and we're still covered for the future. And as you point out, future policies may well refer to only new registrations or may refer to everything. So it's not worth spending a lot of our time on, I don't think.
Thanks. Go ahead, Alan Woods.
I'm just going to take Alan up on his offer there. I think if there's no objection, I know Martin might have an objection to this, but I think we should absolutely take it out, because it will cause more problems putting it in than taking it out, because I do think it will affect the legitimacy of this purpose. So I really do think so. So it should be taken.
Is there one of our other recommendations that cover, you know, they cover the impact to other policies, but because this is only one purpose, and maybe we should discuss at some point, a recommendation how any future policies have to be GDPR compliant or something like that, or do that sort of data analysis or data impact analysis that I think Alan Woods mentioned something like that. So I would recommend, you know, I check back, you know, I'm reading what Tatiana said here too. I'd recommend, you know, or ask Margie if that's okay with her, and then at some point let's discuss the impact of future policies and maybe make a recommendation about that more globally. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Look, this purpose could be subsumed by purpose two, just like the previous one we talked about could be subsumed by purpose one. We'll give it out to people who have legitimate needs for it, and we'll specify those when we talk about access. We put this here because we put a separate purpose, just like escrow, because it's a major type of action, and registrants should be aware of it. So I think we need to keep it. I think we need to be a little bit specific about what the policies are that affect it. And in regards to the five letter policies, someone pointed out you don't need registrant data to file a complaint. That may be true. That is true. But it might be needed looking at the addressing the complaint. So I'm not quite sure of that. But I think we need to be reasonably clear and delineated so that this is clear to registrants what this is about. Thank you.
Okay, so I was just taking a moment to read through the chat. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm looking at Margie, but listening for the whole group. So I'm kind of where we're going to take out future developed domain name registration dispute policy procedures and keep it specific. And, you know, I'm going to ask Kaylin to memorialize for us that we think at some point about, which will have to be pretty soon, the how future policies are impacted by this work. So I want to, you know, a more complex issue is really the one where we have parenthetically here as opposed to the use of such domain names, which I think is correct. And most of the comment agrees that's correct. Does that confuse the reader, and do we need to add something in that about that many commenters put in that these dispute resolution mechanisms do consider the use in the processing of the complaint? Does anybody advocate for any changes based on the public comment they've read to that portion of the purpose? Alan?
Well, I'm one of those commenters, but so yes, I do advocate it. We are using language here which is distinctly different from some well-honed language in the bylaws that were put in to address just exactly this issue, that we say ICANN does not look at issues related to the use of domain names, and here we are. So if we're going to mention it at all, either we can delete this whole comment, delete the parenthetical, or if we're going to have a parenthetical or equivalent, it's got to map to the bylaws and not be something different from it.
So I understood the first 80% of what you heard, but I didn't understand your conclusion or recommendation.
Okay, I think we can remove the parenthetical and simply say information can be released to address dispute resolution processes, which are enumerated there, or if we want a parenthetical or something equivalent to a parenthetical, then it needs to reference the exact wording in the bylaws, which is not what is in this particular parenthetical. Kurt, you must be on mute.
I'm self-muted because I'm still processing it. Maybe somebody could contribute, or, you know, maybe out, if you could. So you're recommending taking out the parenthetical maybe and replacing it with wording that's in the bylaws to be more exact?
I'm saying either remove the parenthetical altogether.
Yes.
And make no reference to data use and simply saying we are following ICANN dispute processes, policies, or if we insist on making the reference to the use of, the use of the domain names, how they are used, it needs to map very closely to the bylaw language and not be something different. Two alternatives.
Okay. And the bylaw language is?
Someone's going to have to pull it up quickly. It's in the detailed comments, but isn't in this isn't in the
summer. All right, let me look at the detailed comments. Can someone from the contracted, I think the contracted parties put in this language and maybe understand why it's there? Let's, in the meantime, let's talk about the introductory words. So coordinate, operationalize, and facilitate. Someone's added establish, and some have added, and it's also recommended just to make that operationalize. You know, I think, any of those will work. I think operation, just making it operationalized makes it simpler. I don't think it would result in any difference. But I remember we spent a lot of time on that, so I'm loath to upset, you know, you know, 50 person hours of work sitting around the table coming up with these three words. Let's hear, while we do a little bit of research, let's consider those three words and go ahead, Diane.
I worked on Tina and it included coordinate, operationalize, and facilitate was the different ways in which there's the interoperability of the way different mechanisms work. So the coordinate was more of the coordination among stakeholder groups through a policy meeting. The operationalized was based upon the operational capacities within ICANN and how the registered party house works with ICANN and the facilitation of policy. And then facilitate was more within the confines of the UDRP proceedings and the facilitation of those proceedings specifically. So that's really where the language was trying to hone in on those different instances.
So I'd be, I understand that. Thanks very much for that. So I understand urge to simplify it. And I, at the end of the day, like I said, I don't think the exact choice of words would impact the use, but I think thought did go into choosing these words, that coordination, operationalize, and facilitator, like the beginning, middle, and the end of the dispute resolution process lifetime. So, you know, I'd, even though might simplify it, I'd be for we could simplify it. I'd be for leaving it the way it is. Alan Greenberg?
Thank you. I'm not sure we need coordinate, facilitate. However, my recollection is that if a contracted party does not provide the information, that contractual compliance may get involved. So we may still need to facilitate. I notice GoDaddy is suggesting that we add the term establish, and I'm not sure we use personal data to establish the policies.
I think that's a good comment. So I think we're okay. Margie, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. This is Margie. I was just going to say that coordinate to me seemed to be what, like, think of the ICANN role, right? Coordinate. Operationalize to me seems to be the providers, and then facilitate seems to be the contracted parties, registrars, but, you know, in as they interact with respect to the UDRP. So that's why I thought those three words made a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that's a slightly different definition than Diane put forward, but still understandable. So there's kind of silence here, and this is really a six of one, half dozen of the other. I'd like to give some deference to the thought process we went through before that Diane kind of outlined, and leave things the way they are. So Caitlin's going to put some stuff up here. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but Emily, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'll wait until Caitlin's put up the words, because I was just going to ask, because I've become confused what we're talking about and agreeing to, and whether we've lost the a concept of deleting the future thing, or whether that's now agreed. I'm not sure. Okay.
I think we... So tentatively, I think we've agreed to take out the future, although I don't know if Margie's on board yet. And after listening to three different sets of arguments that all make sense, I think we'd pay some deference to the thought that went into choosing those three words. So the tiny font is the words, I guess, from the bylaws. I'm Alan Greenberg.
Two things. The other option I offered, which could be ignored, I don't much care, is to eliminate the parenthetical altogether. And the other comment I have is we do need to make sure we list the transfer policy, the transfer dispute policy, and Trang reminded us of that. If she knows of any others, perhaps she should give us the names so we can include them.
So the transfer dispute policy.
I think that's what Trang said it is, and I always believe Trang. It should be added in all of them, of course.
That's good policy. Milton, please go ahead.
Yes, I'm questioning why we need to list any specific dispute resolution policy. If we say facilitate policies for resolution of disputes regarding or relating to domain names, that pretty much covers it. Why are we getting involved in lists which might be maintained endlessly, and then also might lead to the impression anything not included in the list is not covered, which is the point that Alan just made. Oh, my God, we might have forgotten this thing. So what's the point of having a list at all?
Alan, are you back in the queue?
I am back in the queue. We keep on having the circular argument. We delete lists, and then we say, but we need to be more specific. We added them in because initially I seem to recall we didn't have them, and someone said, then it's open-ended. We can't allow that. We have to be specific. I don't much care either way.
So we thought, yeah, either do I. I think that was in deference to the, we need Thomas here. So that was, go ahead, Alan, what you talk instead of I?
Thanks. Yeah, I understand that the specifics argument, and I think this is one of the troubles that we're always going to face, because the whole point of the GDPR and the concept of minimization and necessity and things like that, and making these purposes as specific as possible, is to force us to actually be defensive. And this is the intention of the legislature in the EU. It is hard. That's just the answer. It's supposed to be hard because we're supposed to be clear on what we're using it for. And specificity, and I'm all for specificity, to be perfectly honest, because it forces us to actually give us, to put thought into why actually do we need to use this data, and not just say, well, we probably need it. No, we need to use it every day, and that's why specificity is important. I mean, I think the biggest problem that we're all facing here is that we have such a tight timeline in this that we get frustrated because we can't, we just feel that we don't have the time to actually do the proper enunciation here. But I do think that it is unfortunately a necessary evil if we're going to get this right. And that's why we've got the list in, I think.
Milton, is that an old hand, Milton, or do you have a response?
I have a response. I still don't agree that we need to list these, but if we are going to list them, then in accordance with some of the comments, I think we need to delete those DRPs that do not require personal information to file them.
And what about processing them? So, in the processing of the, in adjudicating the RRDRP or the PDDRP, there might be the requirement to transfer data. Does that make sense, Milton, or no?
Is it a purpose for the collection of the data? It's not. So I would say we don't need those in there. If you're transferring, then yes, that would legitimize, if you're transferring the registrant data actually collected already, then that would be a purpose, yes. But I'm not sure how the PDDRP or the RRDRP do that.
I think there's only been one of those. Margie, can you shed some light on this?
I believe that some of those resolutions relate to registries involve, like a systematic bad faith infringement, like at a very high level. And so it's in order to bring that complaint, you have to know that there were those types of disputes. And so so that's a scenario where it would be triggered. It's not the same as a UDRP, for example, but it's certainly part of proving whether or not the registry has lived up to its obligations and expectations.
Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, the two policies, the purposes get lost in the names. Is one is if the registry is facilitating intellectual property rights violations, and the second one is if a community TLD is not following its own rules. In both of those cases, you might have to look at who the registrant is to see if the content that is on their web or their other service is in fact a violation or not. If regular UDRP or URS, the use of a trademark or the use of some reference to something may be valid. It may be within fair use. So you're going to have to look at who the registrant is. So it's quite possible in both of those cases that whoever is doing the judging may need to look at who the registrants are in specific cases. So I think in both of those cases, you may not need it to file the dispute, but you may well need it to handle the dispute.
So it seems like what Trang put into the chat indicates that there's some data transfer, the name and the address of the current owner of all any at issue domain names. So it's So, and Milton, I agree with what you just said. It's easiest, but I'm also really sensitive to Alan Wood's comment that it's sort of part of our job. And, you know, I share his frustration about not having the time to consider these carefully as we might. Diane, go ahead.
Okay, well, both drafted, could address them by either Alan and Margie's point, by either adding, and in light of the comments that were made, I think that from the IP perspective, we're trying to take into account that it's not just the registration of the domain names, but it's the use in the context of that case scenarios, whether it be for copyright or trademark owners. So, taking that into account, I think if we added the wording use and or registration of domain names and got rid of the parenthetical, then we'd be covering those scenarios to Alan G's point and Margie's. I think also that in relation to listing the specific domain disputes, we could simply have dispute resolutions including those identified in the bylaws, and then that would cover transfer, and that could cover potential need for information in relation to litigation-related disputes as well. So I think that those are two possible rectifications.
Thanks, Diane. You know, I think I would make it clear, but I'm also really sensitive to Alan Greenberg's use of the words exactly as they are in the bylaws. But I didn't, did you, you know, I might have missed this because when you started talking, I started doing some research. Did you address the issue or talk to the issue of whether we should list these dispute resolution policies specifically or not?
Yes, I did. That was the second part of what I said. I was saying that if we're trying to find a balance of making it broad enough to include transfer, make sure that we're including potential litigation or even court if necessary, we can, without listing them specifically, alternatively add language that just excludes listing them specifically and as dispute resolutions and including those as identified in the bylaws. Or RRA, whatever language you want to use, but noting that we're referring to what's already in place and what would be included potentially in the future if those documents were ever changed.
Okay, thanks. I think Alan Woods, can you respond to some of that?
Hey, Kurt, sorry, this is me. I actually was having trouble hearing Diane there, so I'm actually not in a position to respond to it at all. It was a bit choppy on my end for some reason. Sorry.
That's okay. So I think, if I understood you right, Diane, I think the idea of litigation, we talked about that, and I don't know. Let's see if there's support for adding that. I think we thought that litigation would be covered under court orders. So we wanted to keep this to just ICANN policies. And you know, I think court orders come under a different heading. So I'd like to recommend that you know, obviously there's going to have to go to a Alan Greenberg, go ahead.
Yeah, two things. Number one, on that last issue, court orders are probably covered. Most ICANN contracts say that things can be settled with mediation, and mediation are not court orders, so we may need to include that. The problem with the options that Caitlin has put up is they pick and choose different parts of the option. I think we really need to divide the options not as full text, but as saying, do we have all three words or a subset at the beginning? do we include the parenthetical, either include it as is, remove it, or change it, and separate the there's a number of orthogonal things, and we've picked and chosen different ones. So, for instance, in the last one, we eliminate the list of dispute processes, but we also eliminate, coordinate, and facilitate at the same time. So we really need to separate the discussions and settle on one, each of them one by one. Some of them, I think, are easily more easily settled than others. Thank you.
Yes. So I think maybe a way to close this discussion off, I think we could adopt is clearly the wrong word, but put down option two, which contains all of those, all of the language, and then underneath that have three choices, right? So we have option two, and then choice one would be, should we have coordinate, operationalize, and facilitate, or just operationalize? And two is, should we include the parenthetical as written or not include it? And three is, should we list these dispute resolution policies, or should we leave them blank? So I think that might be a clear way of putting that up. I'm just reading Diane's comment. And then, so to Diane's point, a fourth one might be, should we include procedures that are outside of ICANN policies? So with that, I think that would be the best way to put that. So let's put up as our disposition of this is that we developed option two, but these four questions remain. Great. Thank you, Alan. So, Caitlin, note that Alan would be glad to summarize this for the group so we can compare writings. So I think there's four. There's four questions. The three, and then the fourth about to make this broader but still inclusive. Emily Taylor.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Sorry, I was having problems with my audio. I think option two seems to be the best. The problem with Diane's suggestion of refer to dispute mechanisms listed in the bylaws is I don't think that these are listed in the bylaws. I think that they're consensus policies which are separate from the bylaws, but I could be wrong on that. I've just done a quick search for terms like the UDRP and I don't find them in the bylaws. So I think that could be a false positive. Option two seems the best option and close to language that was previously developed, and I think it's a strong argument to say that we should respect language that the group has already spent hours on rather than reinventing it here. So conscious that we have many other things to deal with, I would propose that we adopt option two.
Okay. Any comments in support of Emily's recommendation? Alan Greenberg?
I can support it because it means I don't have to do what I just said I would do. Just for the record, I would do, and I just summarized it, is option two is the base, and four independent decisions: remove the parenthetical, omit the list, remove the word coordinate, remove the word facilitate. So those are four independent changes, but I'm happy to take two as it is, and we can take it off our list.
Yeah. I don't know how to ask this question, so, but it'd be great to close this off, but could we, who would rather, I don't want to make you stick your hand up, but who, you know, who would rather kick this up to the plenary and put these different options to them?
Kirk, may I suggest we kick it up and we'll keep the options in our back pocket if there are disputes, there's disagreement.
Yeah, so I think so I think you don't have to do any writing, Alan. You know, we'll word this in a way that so my recommendation is that we word this in a way that captions option two, but then lists the other so when each group separately looks at these pages, these separate items are addressed. So if there's issues, if there's, you know, clauses in here that people can't live with, we've identified the four issues. So why don't we put it more affirmatively that option two is the best for us, but then highlight in our rationale that these are the issues we discussed. Yes. So, Alan, never mind. Alan Woods. So, I'll just pause for a second to see if anybody wants to, comment on my recommendation. Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, I'll send to Caitlin my summary of the independent options just so they're captured. And, we're not looking at the issue of non-ICANN dispute processes, if there are any that are not court or that are not court related. So that's the only other thing we may need to discuss. You know, mediation.
Okay, thank you,
various
Alan.
Sort.
Okay, let's go to recommendation 12, which is reasonable access. So I want to spend some time on this, and then there's recommendation 14 that's responsible parties that I think we've discussed partially in our last meeting and agreed that some work needs to be done there. So even though that might be the hardest one, that might be the shortest one. So if you could put up recommendation 12, the gist of the comments, the summary of the comments or rationale there. And I'll give us a couple minutes to look at this. Say 5 minutes. See you back. I'm sorry. I intervened and just realized I was on mute. So 2 minutes ago, I said when you're reading this recommendation, I should have introduced it as there's a couple extra bullets in there that need to be removed for easy reading purposes. So the first one are practicable timelines criteria for responses to be provided by contracted parties. And then, so that's the first bullet and so on. So I don't know if that could be fixed in the writing. I remember that, it's my thinking that a majority of the comment that was made really, instilled a sense of urgency that, this group, get to the, discussion about, some sort of unified access model or standardized way of doing that. But my thinking was that, I remember discussing this and we arrived at this language, in a fairly straightforward manner as the set of criteria that, contracted parties must consider when making disclosures. So was there any, even though much of the comment went to be more specific about access, what comments do you think or what was in the comment that would cause us to amend this recommendation? Alan?
Thank you. I'm sympathetic to the comments that say we need more predictability and need to clean this up. But the ALAC comment was, what are the alternatives? It says we will not do anything until we have we look at the unified access model. I'm not sure if there is a way we can look at clarifying the requirements, refining the temporary specification to address the issues of more predictability and timeliness without actually having the full discussion. So, if there is a way to go forward, then I think someone needs to be a little bit more specific about how we get there to decide, so we can decide whether we want to put time into that intermediate step or not. I'm very sympathetic that we don't want to wait forever till we get the unified access model, till we agree on it, and then we implement it, which is going to take a bloody long time. So I'm sympathetic that we should have something in between, but I'm not sure how we could get there. But for the people who ask questions, I think we need some answers. Thank you. Or suggested, I think we need some proposals, rather. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Alan. Tatiana, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Tatiana Tropina, for the record. I reviewed the comment very thoroughly because access is one of my main point of interest, due to my main job. And I really think that we have two issues here. The first issue is about inclusion of the access into the final report of the EPDP. And this recommendation was drafted so carefully to balance different interests. So here I come to the second issue. Some of the detailed comments, like, for example, about criteria, about prematurity of discussing the access, or vice versa, like about the need to discuss it immediately. Honestly, I think the only way to address it without prioritizing some comments and ignoring some other comments is just to say that thank you for your comments. They're taken into account. This work is going to take place in the phase two. And that's where all these comments about criteria for access and so on and so forth are going to be analyzed, because otherwise I believe that this team is going to spend hours and hours and hours arguing yet again about old issues and some new points which were raised there. So why don't we just say that all comments will be taken into account in the phase two? I know that it sounds like quick, dirty, and easy solution, but otherwise I really do not see how we can actually ignore some of the comments and prioritize other. Thank you. And because they are contradictory.
Thanks very much for that, Tatiana. Emily? Hey, Emily, we can't hear you.
Hi, can...
Yep. Nope. Can't hear you yet.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I was agreeing with Tatiana, really. This is a controversial area. The stakeholders say relatively, you know, well thought through and relatively predictable lines along, arguments that have been repeated by other members of the EPDP. This is a sort of stopgap recommendation pending the development of standardized access models, and so I sense that the best thing is really to take note of all of the public comments and but not to highlight any particular ones at this stage. Thank you.
Thanks, Emily. Go ahead, Margie.
Yeah, I completely disagree with the comments made previously, and I think I can provide some perspective on Alan's questions about how this is different from the standardized access discussion. So standardized access discussions are more on the the accreditation side and who gets access and why and under what conditions. The what this recommendation does, though, is it's not dictating how a registrar or a registry responds to a request. That some of the comments address that, right? You know, I agree wholeheartedly with the comments that you can't simply ask a blanket approval across the board. But what this does is it creates predictability for those receiving, for processing a request, for knowing how to process and where to process. There's no standardization here. Each registrar and registry could have their own different format for how it's done and how they're interpreting the temporary specification. So that's how they're different. It's really important that we address this, and we address this now. We've already answered the questions, the gating questions in the charter. So there's nothing preventing us from discussing this now. The only thing that I would probably say is that it's probably not appropriate to have this discussion in a small team, because this is I think the whole purpose of breaking into Subteam A and Subteam B was to focus on issues that are less controversial, that can be handled easily, and obviously this is not one of those. And so my proposal would be that we have this be a topic of discussion in Toronto with a broader team, and not spend much more time on the Subteam calls talking about it, because it's not one of those issues that you can just resolve quickly.
So, Margie, between where we are and the access discussion, what I'm trying to envisage what a recommendation would look like. If you have, understanding your comment about it going to a plenary discussion, what do you have a vision for what this might be? Because I'll end my question there.
Sure. I mean, I think it's probably providing a little more meat to the bullets that are in recommendation 12. But, again, obviously that's a pretty big ask and lift, which would, require the broader group, discussion. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about, defining who falls into each, category of requesters. That's what the standardized access discussions would be later on in a separate phase. But just simply, noting that there needs to be timelines, that there should be a format, it should be clear on how you make requests, those sort of things that, again, it's not, the policy is not telling a registrar what its instructions should be. It's leaving the registrar and the registry the ability to do that, so it's not standardized in that sense. But it's simply informing, informational thing. How do you make a request? What's the timeline? That sort of thing. And so, anyways, my recommendation would be that we talk about the bullets in recommendation 12 and see whether we can make some progress on them.
Okay. Diane, please go ahead.
Kurt, this is a really important topic, and while we all appreciate that it is controversial, it is also something that is certainly within our scope at this juncture. There is a big definitional difference between a lawful of access and the standardized access model that's going to be evaluated in time when appropriate in relation to accreditation. So I think that we've really put a lot of work into this as a team and made a lot of progress when we were at our last face-to-face meeting and came up with this as a good guideline. So much to what you just asked, Margie, I think that where we are is we provided a very simple process right now that is definitely implementable, and now we could just add more detail around it in relation to the comments. But try not to go backwards. I think that could be the goal, is that we did, after much time spent in a plenary context, evaluate that this is a practical guideline that needs to be put into place to standardize requests at this time and until consensus policy is and a uniform access model is determined. And I think now we just simply need to go in our next face-to-face in Toronto and add some more detail to make it functional in a regular manner. So I think that we're almost there, and hopefully we will not go backwards with this, but only go forward.
I think that's a good point. I think there's support for discussing this at plenary also. So thanks, Diane. Alan Greenberg, let's go through the queue and then make some decisions about what we're going to do with this. Anyway, go ahead, Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. A very quick intervention. I read this differently than Tatiana and others. I did not read these questions saying we need to do it in phase one for our phase one final report. I don't think there's any chance in hell we could address these issues and still make the deadline that we want to make for delivering the report. I read this as, should we do some intermediate steps as an early part of phase two and come to some agreement on the kinds of things that Margie and Diane were talking about, not as part of phase one, but very soon afterwards, and not wait for the full access discussion and then implementation to be able to address the needs that are identified by the commenters. So I did not view this as a phase one, but I viewed it as a statement saying we cannot wait for the full thing. We need something intermediate. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. And maybe the way to address that is the same as the last recommendation, where we put those two choices to the plenary, whether it's we attempt to do this as part of phase one, or we address this early on in phase two. Ben Butler, how are you? Go ahead.
I'm good, thanks. I agree. I think this is a discussion for the plenary. I think, and it is something that we have to address the intermediate stage long before we have a fully developed and implemented unified access model. Part of the things we need to consider, in addition to what we have on this bullet point list, we have practicable. I think we also need to, when we discuss it in plenary, talk about making sure that there's enough specificity that contracted parties understand what they need to do And on the flip side of that coin, that there's an enforceability by compliance. Vagueness here is what is leading to the pain points that Margie and Diane and their constituencies are feeling, and it is leading to pain points with contracted parties. So I think we need to make sure that when we talk about the intermediary step, we have focus on specificity and enforceability.
Thank you, Ben. Georgios, please go ahead.
Yes. Also in the GAC, we Georgios, for the record, also in the GAC, I think we read it a bit differently. We don't see this as a discussion in phase one of the access model. We see it more as the recommendation says, that the current temp specs are in place until we do this homework we have to do in the access model. However, our comments were more on what in this period has to be addressed. For example, the issue regarding providing timely responses and have a more predictability than what we have currently in the current temporary specification is one of the issues that the GAC was concerned about. So that was how our comments were directed to this recommendation. Having said all that, I think also we need at a certain point foresee that we have a lot of divergent positions within the group, the EPTB group. And so we have to think, if we do not have a solution on this issue, is there a place for improvements and what those improvements can be? If we go for the mode which is recommended here, that the temporary specs stay in place. So that's how I see the recommendation. I think we should not. I think there is an agreement that we cannot solve those issues now in the small group, because already even in the big group, I think we will have a lot of time discussing those issues. And I urge that we go forward with this discussion in Toronto if possible. Thanks.
Thanks, Georgios. Thanks for that comment. Milton, can you go?
Yes, thank you. This is Milton. So I'm really confused about what Margie and Diane are asking for, and Ben, because it's very clear that the access problem is going to be solved in what we're calling phase two, and they have already agreed that we can't solve it in phase one. So what exactly do they want us to do in this plenary discussion that we're going to spend a lot of time on if we enter into it? It seems that there's total consensus that this is not a small team issue, but the question is, what happens in the plenary? My understanding of this recommendation sounded to me similar to Georgios's, which is we are basically saying we can't solve this problem in the timeline of the EPDP. Therefore, the current requirements in the temporary specification regarding to reasonable access must remain in place until we finish this phase two process of establishing an access mechanism. And in the meantime, the EDPD recommends that criteria around the term reasonable are further explored as part of the implementation of these policy recommendations. So, what that means to me is that, again, as we are implementing the finalized recommendations of this team, we will specify reasonable access in accordance with these bullet points, which I think meets everybody's needs. I don't understand why we need to discuss this in Toronto, other than to say, yes, we all support this recommendation, and that's going to happen. We are, when we implement our final policy recommendations, we are going to further define and implement these particular bullet points. So what is wrong with that? What do you not get from that that you can reasonably expect to get otherwise?
Thanks. So three divergent but pretty eloquent comments. Alan Woods?
Thank you. The funny thing is that I can see both sides on this one, but I think we just need to focus on what we're trying to achieve here, and that is that we're trying to see whether or not the public comments can necessitate a change to this. And I agree with Ben that, you know, things like removing words like practicable and things like that, you know, they're things that we definitely need to discuss in the plenary in Toronto, and I think that is the proper forum for us to actually discuss this one. But, you know, we had come to, you know, a good place, and I agree with Diane on that, where we had, this was not actually as controversial as we all expected it to be, because we understood that the reasonable access was to do with the operational aspect and not the legal aspect of it as well. But we must remember as well that, you know, we can put down and say you must respond, as one of them suggests, within 3 days. And personally, I find that absolutely ridiculous, because that clearly is a person who doesn't understand what is necessary within a company to do this. Because you can't just say every single access request you receive, you will respond within 3 days. And I'm sorry, there's a certain company out there who keeps asking for 3 days as well, which I also laugh at every time, because I'm like, it is the most arbitrary thing I've ever heard in my life. You have 3 days to respond to this. And pardon my language, but to hell I will, because I have other things that I need to do, and, you know, 3 days is arbitrary. So it depends on the specific request, and it depends on the specific registry or registrar, and it depends on an awful lot of things, the considerations, the legal, maybe sometimes you might need legal advice. These things take time, and we need to be careful that we don't fall into this ridiculous concept that enforceability is something that we can just put down on paper as a result of the EPDP. What we needed and what we had actually agreed was that there needs to be some more predictability within the process, that there needs to be avenues identified. They were not hard and fast rules, because they are unenforceable in that form onto the day. There needs to be some sort of a understanding that we will do our best, and we must have it in a way that is clear for people such as the IPC and the PC and for security personnel that they can make those requests. But we cannot say that it must be in X form and Y time, because it will never be enforceable. And I think we're just going to get into the weeds, and we're going to have a huge argument between everybody on this if we go down that route. Let's be practical, Let's be practical in our application of this. We have goodwill. Let's not squander the goodwill. And a lot of these comments that came through, to be perfectly honest, missed the point of what we were getting at. So I think we can get through them in the plenary, and we should get through them in the plenary. But let's not lose where we were on this, and let's be reasonable in our application of it.
Thanks. I have some recommendations, but I think I want to get through the queue. Thanks for that, Alan Woods. Alan Greenberg, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm not as sure as Alan that we can get through this in the plenary. I would be delighted if we can. But regardless, because if we get through it in the plenary, we can put it in real policy, and that makes it a lot easier. And I agree with Alan that, you know, it cannot be everything has to be responded to within 3 days. On the other hand, it may well be that you have to respond saying it's going to take another week. You know, you can't just be silent completely. But I don't want to get into the weeds. The real issue is the policy, as the recommendation as written, says we will make no changes until we have the unified access model, and that means the unified access model implemented. We may never have a unified access model. So, you know, it's been said that if we cannot reduce contracted party liabilities, we may never get it agreed. You know, comments from people like Two Cows imply that. So the comments say we need to do something as an intermediate step. I would like to see it as part of phase one or early in phase two, implemented one way or another. And so I agree that the recommendation as it stands right now should not stand. because we now have an alternative proposed that is an intermediate phase. And I think our target should be try to resolve some of these details in Toronto if we can. And if not, they've got to be really, really high on our list the day the final report is shipped. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Go ahead, Margie.
Sure. To answer Milton's question about, you know, why not just deal with it in implementation, I don't know how many implementation groups you've been involved with, but typically they don't really go out of the scope of what the policy says, and it takes a long time for them to agree on things. Look, for example, at the transfer, the fix who is, right? That's been a policy for how long, and it still hasn't been fully implemented. Look at privacy proxy as another example, or even the transfer policies. And so the reason to have the clarity in the policy now is that it at least it announces to the, you know, the world, if you will, that these are the things that should, you know, that it should cover. And it would give some more predictability on both sides, the contracted party side and the parties that are requesting the access. And so that's why I think, you know, I mean, again, I don't think we should continue discussing it here. I think it is a plenary issue, and let's see how far we can get in Toronto on it, because to the extent that we can answer any of these questions in some way that makes sense among us, you know, we're working collaboratively together. We're going to have a lot more success in dealing with some of these issues than an implementation team. So that's the reason for doing it. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Georgia, thanks for your comment, Margie. Georgia, can you go ahead, please?
Yes. Again, I also do not believe that this can be solved. I mean, we are not talking about solving the standardized access either in phase one or in phase two. We are talking about a recommendation which tries to find consensus points between the community at any phase that can help us go faster, if possible, in this EPDP or in a later policy development process. If we have any points of agreement, like as I said, if people believe that having a timely response or having a predictable access, which I think predictability is one something that the contracted parties also were seeking regarding access. So if we can have any type of consensus, the earlier, the better. And that's what I was insinuating when I was saying that I believe that we should make the comments in a constructive way in order to facilitate a later on possible faster pace towards the standardized access model. When this is going to happen, yes, also I'm not optimistic that this will happen soon, but hopefully it will happen sometime. So that's how I see again, as I see this exercise, we can discuss how can we improve the current situation in practical terms. And some of the concerns or the recommendation on these recommendations, I think they are building up on the consensus about this.
Thanks, Georgios. I'm kind of ready to end this, but go ahead, Milton.
When you say you're ready to end this, I just want to make sure that you'd understand that there are suicide counseling lines available if that's what you mean.
I tried them.
So, yeah, I just think this is a very good illustration of why this is not going to work. We had, in the early stages of this EPDP, we wasted enormous amounts of time because many people wanted to talk only about access before we, and not about GDPR compliance and purposes. And now we're hearing the same theme again, that we have to solve the access question before we do anything else, or we have to accelerate the timetable. And I understood recommendation 12 to be a very reasonable middle ground, a compromise between these two camps, which says, you know, we can only stick with the temp spec until we have a UAM or something else. And it, as an important concession to people who are very concerned about access, we are saying we're going to flesh out the definition of reasonable access in the temp spec along certain agreed criteria. Now, I just don't understand what is wrong with that, and I don't understand how anyone in their right mind can believe that in Toronto we're going to do anything more than that.
Thanks, Milton. So I'll make some comments. I hope they're taken as constructively. But I think that it's, to the extent we're talking about having half of a access discussion or a semi-access discussion in Toronto where some parameters are established, you know, I find some difficulty with that because I think it's hard to have, you know, create half a baby, or I don't know what a good metaphor is, but not only, you know, poking at different aspects of the model and then finding where there's agreement, you know, is a lengthy process and not an efficient process because we're not tackling the whole problem, but just trying to find parts of it we can solve. And then at the end of the day, it might even injure the access discussion because, you know, we might agree on, you know, some lowest common denominator of some agreed upon parameter that actually could be improved on, but, you know, might not be going forward because we're not taking the time to say let the contracted party think through how they could improve upon that parameter. And then once it's established, it's sort of established. So I see risks not only to our achieving our timeline, but you know, actually being able to create something that is meaningful if we have that access discussion. You know, having said that, you know, I do see value in So I understand that. So a uniform. Yeah, I'm talking about a sort of uniform response to request discussion, which is sort of approaching the access discussion. So I see risks in that. On the other hand, I see a need maybe for contracted parties to publish their criteria for these things. So if you want access to data, here is our timelines and format and you know, communication instructions and those things. You know, there might be that in the temp spec, you know, we ask the contracted parties that they publish their criteria. And then the third is translating this language into what is into the temp spec. I think that's something we should definitely talk about in Toronto. So, you know, my recommendation is, you know, we discuss this in the plenary. We focus on the discussion of how to translate these into the temp spec language itself. And then at that time, we ask the question, you know, what can be standardized in the information registrars provide to the public on this. And I would ask, finally to close this off, I would ask those that have urged amendments to this to come armed with thoughts about what that could be. So I'm also kind of loath to ask the contracted parties to come up with where they could make changes to this. I'd rather see those that were urging changes to suggest with some specificity the sorts of improvements or changes that might be requested along the lines that Ben was talking about. All right. So I want to spend I want to just talk about recommendation 14 for a few minutes. So if you could put that up. So I know that reading the recommendation, this recommendation has to go to this recommendation goes to what kind of relationships exist, who are data controllers, who are data processors, where joint controller relationships exist. So I wanted to have a somewhat of a discussion about this. I recognize, you know, especially among the contracted parties, there's a fairly intense discussion going on about, you know, what relationships exist for what purposes and matching them up and getting those right. And I think that's a exercise we'll be going through too. And so I think, I'd ask anybody to comment briefly, but I think, here, what we'll be doing is going through and what the comment reflects is that we'll be going through a purpose by purpose analysis to determine where joint controller relationships exist, where there's a sole controller or maybe two controllers and where one party's a controller and one party's a processor. And this, of course, involves, ICANN and the contracted parties where there are joint controllers and where there's not. And so, I think this one naturally, I think there's some deep consideration going on about this among the different groups here. So I think it's pretty easy to have this discussion in plenary, and I never thought we were going to settle it here, which is why I left it for last. So you can see I'm out of voice and just about out of energy, but if anybody has any comments on that conclusion, I'd welcome them.
Seriously, let's go end this fucking thing. Oh God! Yeah, he just brought up like a whatever. Yep, let's go.
Someone's line is open, just so you're aware.
No, it's just enjoying listening. All right, so we'll write that up that way, and we'll let everybody go. So anyway, thanks for the great discussion. I thought it was constructive, and thanks for hanging in here. So sometimes these issues get more complicated than they need to be. So have a great day, and I guess we're not going to talk, so have a great trip. See you soon.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.